Session number 21287, Reel 2.
Ron Clark, Reel 2.
At that time, we were in a place called St. Nicholas at Wade. And during the night, there was a raid. We didn't know where, but we were in the flight path of the German bombers going to Canterbury. And they were so low going over the top that we could almost see inside the cabins. Very, very low. And they sounded more like a lot of tin cans rattling than airplane engines. It was awful, really. But they were all going out. And anyway, then we looked over towards Canterbury, and of course we could see the fires. I went into Canterbury the next day, and I can't remember exactly why I had to go there. I must have went in there. What I remember about Canterbury was that I don't think they touched the cathedral. I don't think they did. But all the shops in the main street, they were pretty oldie-worldy. And all the beams, the oak beams, were all smouldering. And it was pretty awful what they did. Why I had to go there, I don't know. I can't remember. But I must have been sent there, because I would have never went, not without being ordered to go. Because we were all around that area, our division, which was the 43rd Division. And so I did go in the next day. Awful raid.
You weren't doing any clearing up?
No. No clearing up. No.
What else did you see of the destruction in Canterbury?
I can't remember anything else except seeing all these big shops all destroyed. That's all I can remember seeing. I didn't go around by the Royal West Kents. I think they were there. I think that was their headquarters, I'm not sure. But I didn't go around that way. I can't remember anything else except the destruction of all the nice main streets.
What effect did the bombing have on public morale then?
I didn't really have a lot to do with the public. At one time I was friendly with a girl there. There was a musician. I don't know what the effect was. I just think it was pretty awful, because must have been lost a lot of people there. Indiscriminate bombing.
And next?
Eastbourne. In Sussex. Lovely place. And that was where finally we used to go up onto the South Downs, which is behind Eastbourne. And we used to do our firing practice with the guns and running out cables and radios and going up there to final sort of honing up, ready for the second front, which we went to from Eastbourne. So we were in Eastbourne quite a while.
Did Eastbourne get any raids?
They got a lot. They had a lot of B1s, I believe. The V1s, I don't think they had V2s, I'm not sure. They certainly had V1s up on here. They did have quite a few raids.
Whilst you were there?
Not so much while we were there, but after we were there, they got hit about a bit. Yes. And from after we'd had all this training in gunnery and etc., we from Eastbourne we went to a rehearsal for the Second Front, and we went to Hove. And I well remember the hoppers, the people who collect the hops from London, were all gathered on the sides of the roads, and we didn't know what we were doing, actually. We were just under orders. We didn't know where we were going. It was in the dark. And all these were saying, "Good luck, Tommy." And we didn't know. They thought that we were going on the Second Front then. But all we were doing was going, travelling to Hove in like Brighton as a kind of a rehearsal for embarking on the Second Front. I remember that was troops everywhere. And then we all went back home again to Eastbourne. From Eastbourne, one day we travelled to London in convoy, and well, I remember going round by Hyde Park Corner, and we went on up to Harwich. Well, actually, we stopped the night off of Southend, and that was when the V1s started. We heard a plane, and all the ACAC fire was going up, and it suddenly stopped, and then there was this massive sort of explosion, and we all cheered. We thought the ACAC guns had brought this V1 down, but in actual fact all that had happened was the engine had cut out and come down with its a bomb. And that was what happened at off of Southend somewhere. Then we went on up to Harwich, where we were going to go down again. All the guns and equipment was all loaded on boats, and that was ready for the Second Front. And we went from Harwich. Am I going too quick?
No.
Not much to say about that, except that I didn't realise it until I read it in a book, that the dock workers were all on strike. So we had to do all our own loading of guns into the holds of the ships. And the dock workers were not working. So that wasn't very nice. And then when it came to leaving there, we went down and we went round Beachy Head. So we were looking out across at Beachy Head, which is Eastbourne, where we just left. So we retraced our steps somewhat before we went across to join, because we weren't day one, we were, I'm not sure what day we were supposed to be is, but we left Beachy Head in bright sunlight, and we arrived off of France in the worst storm for 40 years. and we couldn't land. And the 43rd Reconnaissance were our reconnaissance for our regiment. They hit a mine and quite, I don't know, 100 or 200 men were lost and plus a lot injured, and they went down. So we were without a reconnaissance regiment for quite a few weeks in, when we landed. I well remember when we were off of France, there's quite a lot of banging going on, and anyway, I think we probably took 2 days' rations or 1 day's rations. Of course, we were off there for I don't know how long, but it was longer than we expected. And my friend, who was rather a chap who could turn his hand to most things, he could do hairdressing. And he cut the bosun's hair. And the bosun invited us down to their cabin, where there was the carpenter, ship's carpenter, and various other members of his group. And when they finished there, as we were so short of food, we were hungry, they let us clear their plates after they'd finished. And we thoroughly enjoyed that. but then, from there, when it got calmed down a bit, we then had to, our guns had to be put onto landing craft in when we were off of France. And then we landed Arromanches, I believe. Not sure. I know it was about 3 o'clock in the morning when we landed. We had to have three attempts because there were so many vehicles had drowned that we had to get up to a certain depth. And have you heard about the waterproofing?
Can you tell me about it, please?
Yes. Well, before we left Eastbourne to go to Harwich, we had to, what is called, waterproof our vehicles. And that meant to say that you put a kind of a plasticine covering round the various electrical parts to stop, if you were in deep water, the water wouldn't stop the vehicle. And you also had to join the exhaust pipe and make it higher than the cab. So we were in a Jeep when we went over to France. We were, had a Jeep by then. The exhaust pipe had to go above the cab so that that couldn't get full of water. When we landed, so that meant to say you could go through, well, you know, you might get water up to your pedals and accelerator and clutch and that. You might have water in there. But it would still go. Although this had to be taken off at the earliest opportunity because it would cause the vehicle to heat up on dry land. And so we landed at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then we got to Mr. Goddard, who you have already met, he gathered us into a field where we stayed until it was daylight, and then we proceeded somewhere around Bayer somewhere, and that was our landing from Eastbourne, Harwich, and then Arromanches, and de-waterproofing and then away in, into action.
Was there any firing that you encountered on the beaches?
No, we never encountered any any firing. No. It was a little bit hazardous because you're being shouted at to go certain ways, and you're on pebbles, and the back wheels are skidding away like mad. But we had no fire. No, not at that time. No, we didn't.
And then what?
Then we went into action. I can't exactly remember where it was, because when you're in charge of a signal section, you're oftentimes you're told to go to a certain point of map reference to go to the from the guns to the OP, and then you get to that map reference, and often away from all towns, and I mean, really speaking, you had some part of time you had no idea where you were. You were just at a map reference, and of course at them times that was when you got quite a lot of shell fire going from guns to OPs. I can't exactly say where we were at that stage. I know we were around Bayer because I had a nasty skin infection come on, and face and neck, and I had to spend a week in a military hospital with impetigo.
How do you think that happened?
Well, when we left Harwich, I had a little sore under my ear, and it gradually wept and went under the chin, round to the other ear, underneath the chin, and gradually. Then, of course, with having to dig slit trenches, oftentimes you couldn't line them, so it was fairly dry at that time. And when you dug your slit trench, you were led in it, and of course the earth was crumbling, and you used to get a lot of dirt come down on top of you. Well, with me having to use creams on my face, because I was attracting all dirt and infection, because it got worse, and then I had Jensen Violet put all over my beard, which I'd grown, and I looked a bit of a blue beard. And then they sent me to Bayer Military Hospital, which was under Camus. And a Canadian doctor, a major, he found a cure for it. And I was back within a very short time.
What was the cure?
A very good cure. I've never heard of it since. Penicillin spray. Like the sprays they use in the barbers. They sprayed my face. And after, not a very nice sight, all scabs and things. And Emma said, shave. I shaved. And it all come off in a perfectly clear face. A relief. And then back with the 220 battery. After about, I should say, a fortnight. There was a lot going on then, and a lot of, I always never forget. I was in this slit trench, and a German fighter bomber come overhead and crashed in the same field. And the next morning, I looked over, and there was one of the, I think there was two crew in there. One was hanging from a tree on his parachute, and the other one was just a torso in the plane, and that sort of concerned me a bit. Although they were Germans, but saddened me to see these chaps like that. The one who was hanging from the tree, he was dead. But they were both dead. Well, obviously the one that was burnt was, and the one who was hanging from the tree was. Yes, brought down by ACAC fire, I think. I can't remember much about there. I think we went on up to the... Remember the Fally Gap? You heard of that?
Yes.
The Fally Gap. And that was a very confusing there. I mean, American planes were diving down, and anything that moved, they were machine gunning. And that included our troop, although I was on my own. But one come, it seemed to be come right down directly over me, not very far, I mean, it sounded awful. Machine guns blazing. Well, I laid flat on my stomach, and I felt all these sort of things hitting me on the legs, back and head. Oh, crunch. Why aren't I dead? And then I looked and felt round. And do you know what it was? It was the empties. They'd been firing away from me, and I had all the empties in a long line go over me. And I thought it was bullets. So... rather fortunate escape for me. That was Fally Gap. Never forgot that place. Seem to be rows and rows of German Red Cross vehicles. All Red Cross. Red Crosses on them. It was a real... Wow, I can't start to say what it was like there. So many divisions of men, you know. And of course, didn't manage to completely seal it off. So it was... the actual exercise wasn't a success, I don't think.
And you were still doing the same job?
Yeah, well, at that time, yeah. Well, you see, I was a... when we went... first of all, went onto the second front, I was a lance bombardier, you know, one stripe. Well, then, unfortunately, our bombardier, who was the bombardier NCO in charge of signals for Don Troop, he... went to the OP very soon after we got into France, and him and another fellow and Bombardier Barber, who was the OP ACK, they were led along because they were getting shelled, and our NCO in charge of signals and this other radio operator were on the outside. They both got killed, and Bombardier Barber, who was the ACK, although he's led with them, he's a scratch. And so Bombardier Turrell, who was a jolly nice fellow, unfortunately he was killed. So then I took his place, you see, and I then become the troop NCO, instead of just being like the under him, I was the troop NCO. So that was how I became a bombardier. I forget what the question was.
I was asking you if you were still doing the same job.
Yeah, I was. Well, yes. Well, instead of like doing, I was still doing similar jobs, but I had just a little bit more responsibility for, you know, chaps and that. Because we had about 10 in our section and we'd already lost, well, 2 or 3, and we were to lose a few more before we'd gone very far. So we were knocked about pretty much our section.
What opinion did you form of the German soldiers in Normandy?
Well, some, like, there was different categories of how I found the German soldiers. Some were just the same as us, more or less doing what they were told, and there were some fanatics who were, I suppose, very brave men, but they were fanatical. But I found there was a different type. Some very young, 14 and 15. I remember once. This young lad, he was in like German uniform, and he'd just been taken prisoner, and he'd come with us in the OP. He stayed in the OP with us for a few hours or a day or two, and we said, told him to dig a trench because there was a lot of Nebelweefers, moaning minnows dropping around, and we're telling him to dig a slit trench for his own safety. Well, he thought that he was digging his grave, and he pleaded with the OP officer to let him live because he wanted to go back with his mother and father. He didn't want to die. He'd been told by his superior officer that if he was taken prisoner by the British Army, he would be shot. And he thought that he was digging his own grave. And he actually knelt down and pleaded. And fortunately, someone was able to speak a little bit of German and assured him that he wasn't going to die. He would be going back to a prisoner of war camp. And so there was another side that this lad was really scared.
Did you see anything of civilians in Normandy?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, French people. Yeah, we did. We did see French people. I don't think. Well, of course, when I come to look back on it, I can understand it. I don't think they, in some cases, liked us very much. Because once, when we were not very far away from Caen, there was a raid went on in, we had a raid on Caen, and 700 bombers. And I had to go into Caen the next day, and there was like, big little hillocks all in where the buildings had all collapsed and gone onto the roads. And apparently, according to what we were told, and I think I read it somewhere, there was no Germans in there. And so we bombed Caen. Really, I would say, I don't know, I don't, without a German being in there. So I could understand why maybe sometimes French people, although they never said, never showed hostility or anything, but I could understand why they weren't very keen on us at times, because we did do a lot of damage to their property.
So if they didn't show any hostility, how did you know that they weren't?
The way they looked at you. You know, you can sometimes tell by the way people look. I mean, it's altogether different in Holland. They really